Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 29 of Season 5 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Duncan Shields of Chronologically Speaking. Welcome back, Duncan.
Welcome. Thank you. It's good to be back.
We did it. We did it.
Yay.
We're able to not cut one another off. There you go.
Fourth time's the charm.
That's right. So episode 29 begins with the captain continuing his announcement and ends with John acknowledging Powell's help. So we ended things yesterday with, you know, Holly contemplating whether she wants to get a little more champagne or not. And she said, she doesn't need it. They're about to land. And then the captain comes on the intercom and starts talking. And we only heard yesterday him say, ladies and gentlemen. Today he continues, I've just been informed by Dulles Traffic Control that there's a weather front ahead of us. We may be up here a little while longer. And at this point, Holly decides to, first of all, the old lady next to her puts up her glass and wants a refill and says, thank you. And then Holly turns to the stewardess and says, on second thoughts. And she, you know, she's willing to drink a little bit more at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's just funny that, you know, she needs the champagne to deal with seeing Thornburg, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, we discussed this a few weeks ago. He's been so close to her for the entire flight, but she only noticed it, you know, when he complained about his meal.
Did he, because I think, didn't he get bumped from first class?
But you don't bump someone in the middle of a flight. How could you bump someone in the middle of a flight?
Right. Well, they were in the air, but maybe it was the beginning. Was it they were in the air when he got bumped? I thought that, like, he did.
They were in the
up.
Air, and they were in, no. That was, first of all, that was in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles that he got bumped.
Okay.
Before the plane took off. But here, you know, the stewardess. We talked about this 2 weeks ago. The stewardess right. tells him that he's monopolizing all her time, and right. that, you know, he complains that he understands that they moved him from his first class, but he still wants his first class meal, which means that he already was moved. So, you know,
so he was up, he was like up bothering them in the stewardess hut, and then was being brought back to his seat or something like that.
Correct. That was our interpretation 2 weeks ago about that.
All right. But that makes sense.
You know, it makes a lot of sense, but it doesn't make sense that neither one of them noticed the other one beforehand. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
But and that's then, why, because that's why I thought that she was noticing him for the first time, is because he was being brought back halfway through the flight from first class, because that's when they would notice each other. Because I don't buy that he's been there the whole time and she's just noticing him then.
Right.
You know, whatever.
Right. I understand that. We're back to the budget rent-a-car booth, and then we get a shot of John, and the phone rings, and he answers it and goes, Al. So before we get into the whole conversation, you know, I know you mentioned this at the beginning of the week that you might want to talk about this fact. It's a little strange that John, he uses their fax machine. You know, he pulls the phone cord over her as he's moving back and forth and stuff like that. But for him to, you know, automatically answer the phone, I'm pretty sure they had caller ID at that time. But I don't think that John is looking and sees, oh, that's a number from LA, so it must be Al.
No, it's just, it's his phone now. And it's a race to answer when it rings. And she was too slow, and it's somehow okay.
Well, maybe one calls the budget number. You know, like, why should they call?
offhand, I would say to rent a car. That would be my...
No, but you wouldn't call this desk to rent the car, would you? You would call like the national line, wouldn't you? I don't know. I'm trying to remember back in the 1990s, you know, when I rented a car, how did I do it, you know, from that perspective?
If you've just stepped off a plane, I imagine her phone doesn't ring off the hook constantly, but I would say that it is a business line. It's not McLean's personal phone.
Oh, that goes without a say, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. So, yeah. So he goes, Al, hey, I'm right here, partner. Your stiff dossier is coming through right now. So, first of all, I've always loved the word dossier. I think it's a great word.
Well, I've always pronounced it dossier.
Dossier. Okay, it could be.
That's maybe just my French-Canadian background perking
up. It could be. Yeah, there you go. You would know better than I would from that perspective.
Well, it's also like the front room of the house calling it the foyer, and then right. you go down south foyer. In the States, and they're like, leave your shoes in the foyer. And you're like,
that's
I'm
right.
I'm not gonna put my shoes in the foyer. You know, it's like, oh, the foyer. You mean the foyer, right? Yeah.
Exactly. So, I mean, a dossier is a collection of documents about the same topic. They're typically meant to provide comprehensive, detailed information about any particular subject. So, you know, I always thought that a dossier is just a military term. I didn't realize that it's a general term for any type of detailed information that you might, you know, have in a folder.
Yeah, well, I think it's one of those words that becomes a thing. Like bureau just means desk. But because every office has a desk, then it's just the Bureau of Exchange or the Bureau of Internal Affairs or the Bureau of, like, it's become like synonymous with department. And so, like, I think dossier just literally means folder, just uh-huh. like a folder of information. But now it's like, you know, graduated to a whole other realm of definition.
Interesting. Could be. And then we see the facts come through. And I love the fact that, you know, because we're doing this minute by minute, we can actually pause it and read everything that's on there.
Yes.
You know, we can tell so much about the career of Oswald Cochran. You know, and it's great. Now, the thing that gets me the most about it is that, I mean, did you read through all the different things that are written on there?
Nope.
Okay, so I'll go through them. But the first thing that gets me is the actor who plays Cochran is John Costello. Okay, we talked a lot about him a few weeks ago when he was first shown up, before his character was killed off. He was born in 1961, okay? But if you look at this dossier, the first thing mentioned there is May 12th, 1969, assigned duty in Cambodia. So they are sending an 8-year-old to go fight in Cambodia.
Wonderful.
Exactly.
What an overachiever. What an overachiever.
That's right. Then the next entry is December 9th, 1969, assigned secret duty in Laos.
Laos.
Then February 5th, 1970, again, just like a month and a half later, special forces duty in Thailand. June 6th, 1974, technical instructor at Fort Benning. July 5th, 1978, special operation something, Desert Center, what was he? Special Operations Group, Desert Training Center, Saudi Arabia.
There you go.
Then we have November 8th, 1985, special training CIA Langley, Virginia. May 7th, 1986, infield advisor Afghanistan. And then May 11th, 1988, killed in helicopter accident, Honduras.
Well, when they say read between the lines for a lot of black bag stuff, that seems to fit the bill.
Now that we go through it. Especially since, you know, he was 8 years old when he first sent to Cambodia.
Oh, man, that's gold. It's funny also that the fingerprints are clear as day and his actual ID picture is garbage.
Yes.
It's like,
it doesn't even look like him. That's the funny thing.
Super high contrast, awful. Like that. This, I think his ID picture is what faxes were, and the fingerprints here are pure fantasy. I don't know if you could get that kind of detail out of a fax
for sure
in the 90s.
Yeah, but I like it. I think it's great the way that they show us all this information about him.
Yeah, because normally in that kind of in a movie from the 90s where they had no idea that people were going to scour it second by second like this, they probably would have just put a bunch of nonsense on it. But somebody went the extra mile to actually put a sequential list of, you know, probable, you know, good, you know,
jobs,
military theaters
of
war. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. What's also very cool is that Powell was able to get this within minutes.
I don't know, man. It's a few minutes to get all the international top secret military dirt on the stiff from blurry fingerprints that got faxed to him. I'm like, nah, nope.
That's right.
Nope. I don't buy it at all. But thank you, Powell. But thank you.
That's right. The character's name is Sergeant Oswald Cochran. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, are you familiar with the name Oswald?
Just from Patton Oswalt, well, that's Oswalt, and I know that the Penguin's name is Oswalt, the Batman villain, the Penguin's name is Oswalt, and I'm wondering if it's related at all
Copperpot.
to Oswald Cofferpot. I wonder if it's related at all to Oscar. You know, the whole OS spectrum of names is interesting to me. I don't know where they
Right.
originate.
Well, OS means God.
What?
Yes.
Okay.
It's from Anglo-Saxon. The OS means
Alrighty.
God, and the peeled, I don't know why it's is means rule. So Oswald means God's rule, or
Hot
God's,
damn.
yeah.
I did not see that coming.
Yes. And so the origin of the name, it sorry, it's also a it's not just a first name, it is also a last name. You can get
Sure.
it as a surname. The most famous one, obviously, being Lee Harvey Oswald.
Ah, there you go. Yeah, and I wonder if like Patton Oswalt, because it's spelled with a T, is probably a derivative of Oswald, I would
Yeah,
imagine.
probably is. Yeah, I mean it you have it all over Scotland and Northern England and South Germany and Austria and Switzerland. I mean the name became pretty popular. There's like tons of famous people from from a lot of the monarchs in those countries that were named Oswald and stuff like that.
Well, now that you talk about the origins of the name being like God's rule or whatever, that makes a lot more sense that you'd name your royal scion
Yes.
that name. But I like that it often gets shortened to Ozzy, like Ozzy Osbourne. You know, like Ozzy Osbourne has made the shortened form of Oscar. Like before that, you had Ozzy and Harriet, but now you've got like like Ozzy is no longer like a. You know, for a certain subset of people our age, it's not just a quaint name from a bygone era. You know, if you say Ozzy, you're like, oh, so do you regularly do giant heavy metal shows where you test the fear limits of your children's parents? You know, like because Ozzy, like, is he had that whole persona. So like, it's weird that he took this kind of friendly bygone era 1920s name and made it into like a paragon of parental advisory explicit lyrics. You know, that's kind of cool that it's no longer a quaint name, it's still got power behind
Right, but you do know that his name is not Oswald. Ozzy Osbourne is
it. It's a stage name.
Ozzy Oswald's name is John Michael Osbourne. Ozzy is just his nickname.
Because his
Yeah.
last
No, I was like looking when you said that, I started looking at the list of all the people named Oswald and I was like, I don't see any Ozzy
No,
Oswald
Ozzy Osbourne.
here. Ozzy Osbourne's here. Yeah.
He's got kind of a, I guess he's got his first name twice for some reason, but there you go.
Yeah, that's true. And then you have the name Cochrane. Have you ever heard that name
Yep,
before?
yep. I don't know. It's
Okay,
fairly common. I worked with a couple of Cochranes. It's somewhat common.
it's also both Scottish and Irish.
Yep.
Some of the Scottish names derive from a place known as Cochrane in Scotland,
Yep.
and some of them are Anglicizations of last names from the Irish language.
Anglicizations, that's a good word, Mom.
Yeah, that's
Yeah, well,
the
those are the four groups of last names in Scotland, is you've got your professions like Cooper, Thatcher, Smith, and you've got
right.
the name a geological formation or lake close to where your clan originated, like Galashiels or something
Right.
like that. Or you've got son of, like, Adamson, Goodson, that kind of thing, or O'Shea or O'Malley, and I forget what the fourth one is. But it's rare that you get a lot. Oh, fourth one's physical characteristics. You'll get someone like Longshanks or someone with the last name Bull. That was just a nickname. You'd have like three Phillips in the village, and one was huge and two weren't. So the huge one was called Philip the Bull. And then that ended up just becoming a surname after a while. So.
Right. I mean the only Cochrane that I've heard of before is Mickey Cochrane, who was a Hall of Fame baseball player.
Oh,
So I'm familiar with.
yeah. I worked with an Adam Cochrane over in Scotland. And so I've definitely met a few Cochranes here or there. Especially also in Canada, we've got a lot of Scottish and Irish people that were descended here from the originals. So okay. Not the that original. Sorry, the first wave of people that came over from overseas.
Right. And then John says to Al, so what can you tell me about him? He goes, he's dead.
Yeah.
I love the way he delivers that also. He's dead.
Yeah.
You needed a computer to figure that out? No. You don't follow me. According to the Department of Defense, he's been dead for 2 years. What? That's right. Sergeant Oswald Cochran, American advisor in Honduras, killed in a helicopter accident, 5/11/88. John gets interrupted by the rent-a-car girl who says, officer, the response is, read between the lines, and I'd say it looks like a lot of black bag stuff.
Dun, dun, dun.
Exactly. Yeah, I see it. All right, Al. Thanks a lot. Hey, anytime. Okay. So, I mean, it's an interesting conversation. It gives us a lot of, first of all, when you see Al, you see that he's in a much busier office than he was before.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, getting a fax from John is in one place, but getting the fax from Interpol is somewhere a little more, complicated.
Do you think the traffic is indicative of something that happened on his phone call, or do you think that's just hustle and bustle?
No, I don't know. Don't know. And he doesn't have any Twinkies with him this time.
Nope. And it's still magic hour. It's been magic hour in Powell's office for a good long while now for both these phone calls.
Yeah.
Makes sense. In terms of the lighting coming almost laterally in through the windows.
Yeah. And I also love how John is smoking the whole time and just blowing smoke.
Oh, my
Lord. Back in the days when people could do that in the airport.
Yeah, I remember I've been on planes that still have ashtrays in the seats.
Oh, wow.
The whole idea of a smoking section of a plane is just hilarious. Like the smoke's just gonna stop. Yeah. It's wild to see these movies where you see people smoking in hospitals, and McClane like chain smokes in this movie.
Yeah.
He's got a cigarette in like every scene. So maybe that would account for why every scene, like at the beginning of this minute when they go into the cockpit, I'm like, is something on fire in the cockpit? Like, it is like a fog bank in there. It is like so.
You think they're smoking in there?
No, I don't think they are, but they've, in order to make the lights pop and to create more atmosphere, they've filled it with a haze, with some smoke. That's what it looks like to me. And that seems like it's way too moody. It's the same as the lighting in the tower control, in the control tower. It's got this moody lighting in the cockpit, and this moody lighting in Powell's office, and this moody lighting in the control tower. Like everything, as soon as he leaves the brightly lit interior of the main airport, everything is lit like a hallucination, just completely like a horror movie almost.
Yeah, for sure. It's maybe they just didn't have the budget for the lighting. This was one of the highest, budgeted films ever at the time.
No, I think they had too much money for the lighting is my point. Like, I think somebody went, had the lighting at an 11 when we needed the lighting at a 2. The other thing, too, is on Powell's desk in, I guess maybe I'm looking at second 23, there's a machine kind of floating up above his desk.
I saw that. Is that you think it's like a computer?
Yeah, it's got a screen like a computer, but it's also like an electron microscope or like an accountant adding machine or an X-ray machine. There's like directional buttons underneath the screen. It looks like there might be a port for a mini disc, but then a few of the keys on the keyboard are different colors. Like those are the ones
you're supposed to use. They're orange colored, right?
But they almost look like number keys and arrow keys. I'm really curious as to what that machine could possibly be.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Mystified as to what its origins could be.
Yeah. Makes sense. Back to what we're talking about with Cochran. I just want to jump back to that for a second.
Sorry.
I just remembered that I've, there are two other famous fictional Cochrans. Can you think of either of them? One's from a horror movie and one's from a sci-fi movie. I'll give you those hints.
Cochran, Johnny Cochran. Oh, Johnny Cochran. He was OJ's lawyer, Johnny Cochran.
Oh, wow. You know what? I didn't even think about him.
Yeah, that's a pretty famous Cochran.
Yes.
If it don't fit, he must have quit. That's Johnny Cochran. Sci-fi. Shoot.
You know what? It's really weird. He's not listed on the list of all the people here with Cochran. So I wonder if it's if he spells it differently, and that's why it doesn't appear here.
Maybe. I don't think he did. I don't know. I give up on
Donny the quiz. Johnny Cochran is without an E. That's the difference here. What I looked up only had an E. Oswald Cochran has an E. That's why it didn't come up. Wow. Okay. There you got me on that one. So there's one. But that's not a fictional character. That's a real character. I'm talking about fictional characters.
Was one of them played by Arnold Schwarzenegger by any chance?
No. No. Okay. One of them is in Child's Play 3. One of the characters' name is Colonel Cochran.
Okay.
And then the other one is a little more familiar to me, at least, from Star Trek, First Contact, Zefram Cochran.
Oh, Zefram. Good old Zefram Cochran. That's right.
Yeah, he was also in Star Trek Enterprise, the first episode. He handed the torch over,
What's that, Oliver Cromwell? Cromwell? What's that actor's
name? James Cromwell.
James Cromwell, yeah. Not Oliver Cromwell,
no. Yes.
James Cromwell, right?
Oliver Cromwell was someone else. Yeah.
Someone else.
Right, so basically that's all I have for this minute. John hangs up the phone and just starts looking at the dossier that came through, trying to figure it out.
The only other things I've got is that the pilot actor needs to work on his pilot voice. He's talking like an actual person, and he doesn't have the "Hello, passengers. This is your pilot speaking." And it's too ominous the way he says, "We'll be up here for a little while longer." I'm like, you're supposed to keep them calm. that's not I think, they say there's no small parts, and I know he's only got like one line in the movie, but I was like,
no, he's got more than one line. That he does.
I didn't think he did a very good job of calming the passengers down there.
He's an actor played by the actor is Michael Francis Clark. Pretty much just has bit parts in movies. He has 42 IMDb credits, but there's nothing that really stood out for me. Most of them are TV shows, just like a small little part.
I don't think it's a good idea to give too much champagne to Bonnie Bedelia's psychotic old lady seatmate with her, the dog killing,
Well, nobody knows that she has, a shocker with her.
Yeah. Stun
gun. That's right.
Yeah.
We talked about this a few weeks ago. I found it really strange that she was able to get it on the plane. Even pre-9/11.
Even in the 90s, that's like, that's not coming on the plane, lady, for sure. That's a real good point.
Yeah.
I do want to talk a little bit about poor William Atherton. I think he joins the ranks of Jack Gleason, Imelda Staunton, Tom Felton, Louise Fletcher, long list of other people who played too good of an evil character. Like Jack Gleason was, of course, King Joffrey. Imelda Staunton was, what's her face from Harry Potter, the horrible witch who dressed in pink who moved in from the Ministry of Witches to take over the school. Tom Felton was, of course, one of the bad guys. Jason Isaac played the dad. Anyway, and Louise Fletcher was Nurse Ratched.
Yeah,
I didn't write down their character names because I thought I would never forget, but here I am.
There you go.
Malfoy. Malfoy. The Malfoys. Right. Tom Felton was Draco Malfoy. But for decades, people would stop Atherton and yell, "Hey, pencil neck," or "Hey, Dickless," in the street. And he did not care for it. He said in interviews it was actually kind of hellish because he's a victim of his own success. He was too good at being an awful person. He just plays it too well. And so people would take liberties in the street with him. And it got old. It got old after a few years. And this makes me think of how, Anthony Michael Hall got super beefy and jacked. And, a little violent after being too good at playing the geek or the nerd. And I think something similar happened to Screech from Saved by the Bell and Jaleel White from Family Matters. They all hit the gym pretty hard after their success and became, don't mistake me for a weak nerd. I think their personal lives were a little upended by the success of their roles.
Yeah.
But that's all right. That's all I got.
Okay, so the script has a few minor discrepancies, nothing major here. Holly says, instead of on second thought, she says, "Yes, another." And then it says McLean paces smoking ring. Both the fax machine and the telephone light up. McLean beats her to it. And then he has this conversation with Al. And it's pretty much the same thing. Even, you know, the information about when Cochran was killed. So, you know, that's all exactly as it is in the script. And then it says John hangs up and the girl gives him an eye. Gives him the eye. Mm-hmm. All right. So every Thursday we have a segment called Aviation Thursday, where my guests will give their top five movies that are dealing with airplanes or airports. So what have you got for us, Duncan?
I think number five would probably have to be Flight with Denzel Washington. I think that was a really good example of a seasoned pilot coming up with something amazing in a clinch to save lives, but who was drunk at the time, because I remember there was a big thing going on through the airline industry of how there's not much to do on a long, boring flight, and that takeoff and landing are really the only two things where pilots are needed, and the rest is kind of just in case. I don't know if that's true or not, but I know that there was a lot of drinking in the flight industry, and that this was a pretty famous case where it was exposed. But I thought his performance in it and a lot of the flight sequences are pretty amazing. Number four, probably Blood Red Sky. Came out recently, where a woman and her daughter are taking a plane, and it's kind of a horror movie, and a lot of really cool things unfold. I don't want to spoil anything, but there's a reason why she's flying at night. That's all I'm going to say. But Blood Red Sky is a really, really good movie. I thought I like it when you take a premise and, you know, like the Red Eye, and make it. And there's so many movies where somebody's getting chased around a plane, but that, I really like Blood Red Sky. And then number three would be Airplane. Of course, you know, the hilarious Zucker one that brought back so many careers for so many people, like Leslie Nielsen and Robert Stack, and all these actors that have been playing the serious man for like 30 years got to get a second crack at being the funny guy for the last 20 years of their career or whatever, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Number two would probably be the plane section of the Twilight Zone movie was the remake of the one with William Shatner.
Right.
Or the remake of the episode with William Shatner, but it was right. Jonathan Lithgow.
It was John Lithgow, right.
Yeah, the creature on the plane was just so well realized. Even to this day, I think it's still fantastic. And then, number one is probably Top Gun Maverick. The shocked the pants off me. That movie was fantastic, and I had no idea. I had no reason to be as good as it was, for sure. Honorable mentions to Plane, Trains, Automobiles, honorable mentions to Con Air, and honorable mentions to, of course, Snakes on a Plane, because that's just hilarious.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Great. You want to once again tell everyone how they can find Duncan Shields?
Just go look at By Duncan Shields on all the social medias and look for Chronologically Speaking and the Time Bandits Minute, and you'll find some wonderful Movie by Minute podcast there.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie by Minute. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on my website, movieonminute.com, or you can find me on Facebook. So, Duncan, do you feel like coming back in tomorrow to finishing off the week?
Heck yes.
All right, so until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little village.